Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Bald Move Prestige film. Today, we're talking about 1991's firefighting action film, Backdraft. It's directed by Ron Howard, who's done a lot of lightweight, forgettable films like Splash, Cocoon. It's done some that people really like Willow. And then there's my personal favorites, Apollo 13, A Beautiful Mind. Done some fine work. I think this is some of it. It's written by Gregory Wyden, who, did you know this, is the creator, billed as the creator of the Highlander film and TV franchise.
Ooh, all right.
This guy's out there getting it done. Also, The Prophecy, kind of cult horror flick. Mm-hmm. It stars Kurt Russell. We've seen him on The Thing, Stargate, Tombstone. That's just the movies that we've done a podcast on. William Baldwin. They broke out the old emergency backup Baldwin.
Yeah, they broke the glass. They pulled the emergency Baldwin out.
He's been in Flatliners.
That's the thing.
I think he played himself because he's like, and the joke was that he's kind of a minor shitty celebrity on saving Sarah Silverman or saving Sarah Mar. I don't know what the fuck.
Yeah. That movie. I don't know, man. He's 2 years into his career here, and I feel like he peaked, but we can talk about it.
He peaked. Robert De Niro. Oh my God! Speaking of someone's the opposite of peaked early, Goodfellas, Heat, Casino, Godfather 2, just a few of the many amazing films he's been in. Donald Sutherland, mm-hmm. been in JFK, Outbreak, The Italian Job, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Kids today probably know him as President Snow from the Hunger Games films. You got Jennifer Jason Leigh, Fast Times, Ridgemont High, Road to Perdition, The Hateful Eight, and Scott Glenn. From Red October, Silence of the Lambs, same year, by the way, which I want to talk about. Uh-huh. Training Day, but every Bald Move fan's got to know him as Pappy Kevin Garvey.
Uh-huh.
Kevin from Garvey Senior on The Leftovers. Yep. Rebecca De Mornay from Risky Business, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Jason Gedrick. This guy like is a literal who, but 80s kids will know him as the Iron Eagle from Iron Eagle. JT Walsh plays an alderman in this. He's kind of the bland authority figure from Pleasantville, A Few Good Men, Good Morning Vietnam.
Is he Knee Bomb from The Negotiator?
I don't know.
Does he play Knee Bomb? I love The Negotiator.
Well, we all have to get around to watching one of these days.
Yeah.
Clint Howard. Did you know these were Ron Howard's little bro?
Oh, yeah. He loves to play weirdos.
He does. He's from Waterboy and Apollo 13. And finally, David Crosby plays himself as a hippie. He's the founder, one of the founding members of the Byrds and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Jim, this is, I can only presume, every firefighter's favorite movie. Mm-hmm. I know it's my brother who was a former firefighter's favorite movie. It's Backdraft. Actually, I don't know if it's his favorite movie, but he likes it. It's Backdraft. What did you think of it?
Ooh, boy, this movie is ridiculous. This is more akin to like Armageddon, or Day After Tomorrow or something like that. That's a perfect comparison. This is to fire what Day After Tomorrow is to ice. The Song of Ice and Fire is complete here with this movie. Look, I don't know anything really about fire, but I have to presume, both because I think it's true, but also because for my own sanity, that fire is not an animal that is stalking me like a jungle cat in my sleep. And because otherwise I just would never sleep. I just couldn't sleep with a jungle cat named Fire out there.
Look, Jim, you're talking like someone who has never been seen by fire.
This is true. I've never looked. The fire has never looked at me. Yeah.
The flames have never looked you deep into the soul wells of your eyes and down to your heart and made that physical connection. And if you did, if you love the fire even a little bit, you'd love this movie.
But I mean, the way that fire is portrayed in this, they talk about it as like some animal that's hunting you. But just the way that like things happen, like they go into buildings and fire is just coming out of everywhere and it's exploding out of everywhere. People are being blown back hundreds of feet through car windows by fire. And I get there's some pressure involved in a backdraft, but are we really shooting people across streets and through their own car windows?
Engineered backdraft? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. It all seems so ludicrous to me. Like every fire scene is like, okay, well, that's impressive from a special effects perspective, but
and it is.
My God, it's just ludicrous. It's ludicrous.
So I think your comparison to the Day After Tomorrow is not the best one. If you had gone with like Twister, I think Twister is the perfect example of you take a real thing.
Oh boy, really?
Which a tornado
feels more real.
Well, that's, I don't know. Maybe you've been seen by a tornado, but it takes a real thing, tornado chasers and what they do. And it just amps the tension and the danger of what is a dangerous job. To 11. And I think that's what, like, you know, like, backdraft is not a realistic depiction of firefighting because what I've heard firemen talk about it is, like, what you just can't see shit inside a structure. A fully involved structure fire, it's just all steam and smoke, and you can see maybe a foot in front of your face.
Sure.
And you're all just, like, yeah. So, like,
the
fact
that
they're...
You can't make a movie about that.
Yeah, they're in these lovely, you know, 30-foot ceiling, 100-by-100 rooms. They're just fully engulfed in fire, and they're not wearing their self-contained breathing apparatus.
Right.
And they half the time don't even have their helmets on, and they're having conversations and are able to see. Like, that's not very realistic. And just like in Twister, the tornadoes are kind of like anthropomorphized. They're given a theme, like a Jaws theme song, and they can disappear and then reappear, and they're almost like a movie slasher villain. The fire is that in Backdraft. It you know, like, it's a lot of stuff to talking about, like backdrafts and fires, like, you know, having cycles and stuff is real, but like this is like positing that the fire is a living thing that has some kind of animus, a hate, and that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously,
but I think I actually think that if they'd stuck to the fire, this would be a really, really tight, you know, like hour 45 movie. But they layer on like girl drama. They layer on bro drama and everything that takes away from what I think is the cool part of this movie, which is Robert De Niro being a blue collar Sherlock Holmes of fire. Like this man who can just like track down the flames, the marking here, and the fact that the suit's burnt off here, and that the fire had to start here, and he talks about it very poetically, and the way he breaks that, like I really enjoy anytime they have, like, you know, these kind of obscure professionals, you know, even if it's dramatized, I really like getting in their heads and seeing how they think. I think that's the best part of the movie, their investigation, and I thought that's actually a really cool plot.
Sure.
Which, when I saw this for the first time, I remember really being blown away by, like, oh my God, you know, I can't believe where this is going. I almost said a giant spoiler, and I don't know, there's probably a lot of people I haven't seen this 30-year-old film, but...
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I got a soft spot, and maybe it is because my brother is a firefighter, and I have been a part of a fireman's funeral that, like, at the end especially really gets me, you know?
I guess if I had more experience with fire... I may not have been laughing out loud when people got backdrafted every time without fail. It was hilarious because
it's
hilarious. So over the top.
Even when the guy's face got melted, dude.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was the funniest one.
Yeah.
God.
And I have to preface everything I'm saying by, like, I think people who put their lives on the line to help other people are by and large heroes. So, you know, in the real world, firemen, for the most part, definitely heroes. But like in this movie, it's truly insane.
I want to talk about that. Everybody loves firemen. Nobody's like, you know who fucked me over the other day? A fucking fireman. Like, they only show up.
Right.
Well, I guess small business owners who are always getting their shit condemned by fire marshals might hate firemen. But you know what?
Okay. Yeah.
You know what? Those regulations are written in blood and third degree burns, buddy. Suck it up. Fucking keep your back door unblocked. Good advice for anyone, but like everyone loves firemen because they just they only show up when you need them. They
really can't do any more harm than the fire is already doing. So they can't complain, right?
Like, that's the best kind of, like, you got to move fast, you got to take chances, because, like, as you say, you know, like, if you don't show up at all, the place, you know what's going to happen. The place is going to burn down, people are going to die. Like, you can only do good. And they are, you know, there is, like, the, it seems like it's fun to be a fireman or woman. There's this esprit de corps. Y'all live in a big clubhouse. Sometimes you slide down brass poles like a little kid.
Oh, but don't do it in your underwear. That seems painful.
You... Depends on how silky your cheeks are, your thighs are, Jim.
I suppose so.
And they look fucking cool. The silhouette of a firefighter is like synonymous with some heroic figure, and they're always portrayed like there's shit. Like, I've seen four or five of these film frames airbrushed onto a firefighter's T-shirt in my day. You know, like Kurt Russell jumping through the flames with that baby cradled in his arm and an axe in his other hand. It's just like they look awesome. They look cool. They got the cool helmets. They got the axes and the irons, and it's really cool. And I'm actually surprised there's not more kind of heroic firemen movies. You know, like it's about firemen, but I guess there's just not much drama there. Maybe they're usually pulled into like emergency responders. Like if there's a disaster film, they're certainly there. They're fighting a volcano. They're fighting a structure fire, whatever. If there's a cop film, you know, they're definitely, but they're not like inherently interesting, I guess, enough.
I don't know. I mean, because it's strange to me that there aren't more, because I think this could be an interesting field to explore. It's just like, I guess the backdraft is the most exciting thing that happens in a fire, right? Because most of the time, like, you probably want to take it pretty methodically, pretty slow. And to make it interesting, you want to have a loose cannon like Kurt Russell in this movie. He's just running into fires, I think waving his axe at the fire. Like, I think he's literally trying to kill the animal that is the fire.
Yeah, no, direct quote, like when the backdraft knocks one of them down one time, he like jerks it back to feed. He's like, don't let it see that you're afraid. Don't take that shit from the fire. Yeah.
So you need to have something kind of over the top like that to amp up the excitement of what is usually a very murky and very slow and methodical process.
I would think so. Like, I feel like a lot of the danger, and don't get me wrong, like, firefighters have dangerous jobs. But like, also it seems like they were being deliberately crazy in this movie. Like, no wait for backup, just jump right in. But you know, that's what you've got this loose cannon, Kurt, Russell, who's good. He's good at playing those kind of damaged, loose cannons. And he drives a lot of the drama here.
Oh yeah. He's great in this.
It's got great Chicago scenery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Shot authentically in the Windy City. And I think there's really good performances. I think that Robert De Niro is actually really good in here. I think Kurt Russell is really good. I think Scott Glenn is really good. It's just like, I think the movie grinds to a halt every time Kurt Russell, you know, shows up unannounced at his ex-wife's house to, like, you know, drunkenly cry. And whatever they're doing with Jennifer Jason Leigh is like the liaison to the sleazy alderman who's trying to court Billy Baldwin.
No, all that, like, side plot is too thin. It's not given enough time, but at the same time, it's given too much time.
And it's taken away. Like, imagine if you take all that stuff out, this movie just kind of would propel. And
it's
instead
a lot tighter,
of being
a
little flabby two-hour, 15-minute movie, it'd be more of a tight 150, and you got something. But like, I like what's there. And you mentioned the fire effects. I mean, they're mostly practical. I wouldn't say that they're not CGI. This was the year that Terminator 2, you know, swept all the technical Oscars. So like, the day of CGI was upon us, or the dawn. But like, most of this stuff was just all practical, and it's beautiful.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's like, insane. Terrifying, but it's beautiful. Like, they got 50-gallon barrels going off like Roman candles.
That's the thing, man. They're just going off. They're just going off for no reason, as best I can tell. I don't know how hot it's supposed to be.
really fucking hot. That room was all fire. Look at all the places they're not on fire, and then look at the places that are. It's 90% on fire. Like,
yeah, I just don't know how people survive in that atmosphere. If barrels are spontaneously combusting,
like 3 feet from your feet. By the way,
How is a human breathing in that room? But what do I know? What do I know? I just like to watch barrels explode in Kurt Russell's face.
Yeah. I don't know. And there's like a lot of and I do think the central mystery is really fucking cool. I guess that's how you make a firefighting movie interesting. You blend the firefighting. You put in I guess I like the brother drama, and the really thing that makes it the thing that carries it from action scene to action scene is Robert De Niro investigating a fire. Like arson investigation does seem like a legit fascinating. Yeah, I think all that, anything that's investigating, anything that's like detective, anything that you're like a medical examiner, that stuff is just seems like, and it's inherently fascinating. And that's like half of the movie. It's probably the best half.
Yeah, the pacing is weird, though, because it takes them a while to even get to that part, because Robert De Niro comes in. He's just kind of a side character who, you know, is part of the operation. He comes in, he looks at a fire thing, and he goes away. And he does that like twice. And then like somewhere around the 2/3 mark of this movie, his plot really kicks in, and it's resolved way too fast. Like,
really?
The whole movie should have been this, and you should have been following mostly those three characters, right? The two brothers and him. But I feel like you're off with these other side things for way too long.
Yeah.
And by the time you get around to, like, Donald Sutherland has two scenes in this movie. One is establishing him as a lunatic firebug who's so caught up in being an arsonist that he can't even hold his shit together to get on parole.
Right,
and get through his parole meeting that. When Robert De Niro points to a melted doll, and asks him a couple questions. So he's clearly crazy. And then Billy Baldwin, the second scene, goes to him and says, "Hey, can you tell me who's doing this?" And it's such an obvious fucking resolution that Robert De Niro should have immediately recognized what's going on here. Like, none of that. I don't know. We got to talk about
you
this
think
in context.
So? You
of
think
Silence
that Robert
of
De Niro would jump like a firefighter must be doing this?
I what he should be jumping to is, hey, there's this chemical on here. Uh-huh. Who has access to these chemicals and who hates fire? Like, that's all the Donald Sutherland gives to this plot.
Gosh,
and
I feel like
not
a
enough.
Fucking idiot,
it's just
because
not enough.
I thought that was super clever. I thought it
it's
was
not
I was
Silence
like,
of the Lambs. When you look at this, it well, wants to be Silence of the Lambs, and it's nowhere near Silence of the Lambs.
Okay, let's put a pin in that, because I want to start talking spoilers. If you want to see a gripping, thrilling, exciting, / shitty, overwrought, cliche filled film about firefighting, then I can heartily recommend / warn you off of Backdraft.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
And now, back with more Bald Move.
So the movie, if you don't know, it is about a boy, Billy Baldwin, whose father, heroic fire father, dies in a fire right in front of his eyes, and he struggles to follow in his father and older brother's footsteps. He's assigned to the toughest fire station in New York City underneath his brother. There is a New York City alderman, it seems incredibly low stakes, who's hustling developments, flipping developments for a couple of $50,000-$100,000, and somehow firemen are being, their funding are being cut, and all the firemen are angry about that. Meanwhile, there's an arsonist in the city that's setting fires to buildings and killing people with impunity, maybe due to the budget cuts. And that is the pillars that the movie rests on. The brother's relationship, finding the arsonist in time before he kills again, and borrowing heavily off of 1991's Silence of the Lamb. So there, that's what the movie's about. Go watch it if you want to watch it and come back to this. I want to start there, Jim. In February of 1991, Silence of the Lambs comes out. This movie comes out, I think, in May.
Okay.
Contemporary. The Donald Sutherland thing seems to be aping and biting so hard on the Hannibal Lecter stuff. But there can't be related. Like, this happens so many times in Hollywood, and every time I look into it, it's like a coincidence. But, like, holy shit. It seems like it's hard to believe that they didn't see some advanced screeners or copies or notes. Yeah. And it's like, hey, let's go to reshoot this Donald Sutherland stuff to make him look like he's Hannibal Lecter of fire.
this stuff can happen. I whenever I think of this kind of scenario, I think of the fire document. Nope. I swear I'm not trying to make a direct connection here, but the Fire Festival documentaries that came out.
Yeah.
There were two, right? Like, Hulu did one, and Netflix was like, fuck, Hulu's making a Fire Festival documentary. We also need to make one to steal some of their thunder. And so both of those movies were being made simultaneously, came out almost on the same day, I think.
Yeah. Back to back.
So, like, there is this parallel kind of production that happens when somebody finds out this studio is doing this thing. Maybe we can, like, also do something similar and kind of glom onto their marketing, maybe use that a little bit. I feel like it's not out of the question that they discovered what they were doing with Silence of the Lambs and that influenced this movie in some kind of way.
I also looked up, and it's just 2 years before Silence of the Lambs, the novel, came out, which probably started a whole bunch of optioning. And since it seemingly was a popular novel at the time, I wonder if it's like, oh, people were just like grabbing on to Hannibal Lecter as this cool new archetype. And coincidentally that
it could
be
a coincidence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not even coincidence. It's like the source material that came out, people started borrowing it and adapting it immediately. And Backdraft is one of the results, but I couldn't find anything that directly connects the two in terms of inspiration, but like clearly. Yeah. And the thing is, it just doesn't work as well.
It's not as fleshed out for a while.
Donald Sutherland is not Anthony Hopkins, and that's not a slight on Donald Sutherland. It's just like, I don't know. I just don't believe he's that fully insane, I guess. When he plays insane, it seems like he's, as soon as they yell cut, he is just giggling, just laughing his ass off. And I never got that with Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the way he's just, especially in that parole scene.
Oh yeah, he's full on insane. He's I will say, yeah, there is like a tinge of comedy to it, in my opinion. And I don't want to take anything away from it. I like Donald Sutherland, but Anthony Hopkins is Anthony Hopkins. Come on.
Yeah. I think that what did you think of that parole scene, by the way?
I think it's a farce. It's hilarious.
But do you think it's like, I think
the psychiatrist should be brought up on charges.
There you go.
Because she's a fucking idiot.
But like, I felt like in the 80s and 90s, because we were just coming off of this crime wave that started in the 70s, and like the crime until very recently has fallen all across the board in America since then. But I remember reading The Dark Knight, you know, Frank Miller's, you know, seminal piece that came out, and like, all of the psychologists and sociologists in that comic book were betrayed as these willfully blind idiots, useful idiots for criminals. Like, oh, I know he butchered an orphanage, but he had a rough childhood and we really should let him off with this. And instead of like, it's just such a, it's such a slur on social workers and psychologists. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like this movie is a piece where it's like, you have to have scarred ass Robert De Niro hauling himself out of the arson pit to wave a burnt baby doll in front of,
and ask, you know, the, like, that's the only thing
saving us from the criminal justice system run amok is tough guys like Robert De Niro. It's just such a fucking crazy thing.
Yeah, that scene is terrible. And it's one of his only two scenes, right?
So, especially since the psychologist is like, as soon as he starts up, she's like, oh God, if, you know, of course he's not. I'm like, it's just, it's
you
offensive.
Never asked him what he thought about fire?
Well, no, I think it's like they play her as like knowing, like she's knowingly in on, like she's got some kind of incentive to let psychos out on the street. Oh. And like when she's like, oh, Jesus, the jig is up, when he starts like pulls out the baby doll. And I'm like, I just, this seems so insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I got a big kick out of that.
I mean, it's Silence of the Lambs light. Right. I mean, even if Donald Sutherland was replaced by Anthony Hopkins and delivered the same lines with the gravitas that he has, and the gravitas that Hannibal Lecter has, this movie still doesn't do enough service to that plot to make it worth it.
What do you mean, though? Because it's the primary plot.
Yeah, but there are literally two scenes. It's one scene is this guy's a crazy firebug. The next scene is he's solving the case. Like,
in Silence of the Lambs, isn't Anthony Hopkins only in that for like 5 minutes? Like, that's like the infamous thing about that movie is that like he got the supporting Oscar and he was only in it for like, hold on, finish your point. I want to look up that.
I could have sworn he was in it longer, but I don't know. I just, the only scenes I remember a couple of scenes. I remember him having conversations with Jodie Foster. And I remember him busting out of prison and wearing skins. Yeah.
So Silence of the Lambs is an hour and 58 minutes, and he's in it 16 minutes of it.
All right. Which is more than I said. Is in this for like a minute?
He's in it for, no, and a half? No, 5 or 6 minutes. Gotta be.
Maybe. Yeah, I suppose there's the scene outside on the bench when he's waiting to go into his parole hearing.
Oh, yeah. That's the one that where it's part like, of they the set same him scene. Up and who he is and all that kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just too thin. It's too thin. I mean, Hannibal Lecter was a big part of solving the case. He was a big part of that movie, despite only being in it 16 minutes. But Donald Sutherland is not.
And they did a better job of him playing with her, where in this, it's like, you know, like throughout the whole movie, Hannibal Lecter's fucking with Clarice.
Yeah.
Where this movie, I felt like he's only really fucking Billy Baldwin in the final scene, and it's only to just get him to admit that he was scared that he saw his daddy burn, and then he just gave everything. Yeah. And it's like, you know, that was the only ask, you know.
Yeah, he's a fire fetishist. You know, he loves the way that the fire makes people feel, I guess.
Keeps them warm for the rest of their life, I've heard. Mm-hmm. But
this movie, let me start off. This movie sets the wrong tone right from the beginning. So this movie is weirdly saccharine from like that Ron Howard vibe that you get at the beginning. Like, they start up with a soft rock song with these kids like at the firehouse, and their daddy's going out to fight a fire. One of them gets swept up.
Andy fucking Griffith, except for instead of police, it's firemen. Yeah.
And they get to the place, his dad's being a hero, and On a fucking dime, this movie turns and his dad blows up. The helmet comes shooting out of the window, lands at the kid's feet. He's crying. The journalist is in his face taking pictures, which are going to be on the cover of Time.
Prize winning picture on Time magazine.
And this happens in the blink of an eye. I cannot stress how quickly this movie turns on a dime, which to me is hilarious. And then that sets the tone for the rest of the movie. And every time they do a cheesy ass soft rock montage, it's right after somebody got blown up by a backdraft. It's there's whiplash all over this movie.
I do have in my notes that the movie goes hard very early on, because you're right. I completely forgot the whole dual casting of Kurt Russell.
Oh, that's
I thought Kurt Russell was in this movie more, but you know, his dad's going to be, so maybe I got that wrong and there's something else. And but like, yeah, and like, it's just like, every kid's fantasy. Your dad's a fireman and you're at the firehouse and you're busting your chops mm-hmm. with your older brother, and then a fire bell rings and your dad's like, yeah, sport, put on the helmet, come on with me and right. watch me jump heroically from fire escape to fire escape, single-handedly rescue somebody, and then just as mm-hmm. the music is swelling to like, and you see this little boy's just loving his father. It's uh-huh. like Ron Howard's like, love you more. You know, he's cranking that they love, gets more love, more love. He's just like glowing with love. It's like Ralphie on Christmas morning seeing his fucking Red Rider. Mm-hmm. And he does. He's the fucking, his hat with the guy's name on it comes blasting out of that thing and runs yeah. right at his feet. Yeah, it's.
I mean, I swear there are like Dalmatians dancing in those scenes right up until the point his dad blows up. It's like literally the most cliche firefighter thing I could possibly think of. And then yeah. it turns into kid's dad is dead. Right. I thought it was. Him.
Yeah. Who did this? Hans Zimmer. OK. Yeah. And the score is like super manipulative. And like you said, turns yeah. on a dime. But I don't know what else you do with it. It's funny because I read a lot of contemporary coverage of this where it feels like this movie is pretty well loved. It's got a high rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Roger Ebert gave it what I would call a scathing 3-star review.
Yeah, it's. His review doesn't read like a 3-star. It reads like a 2-star, maybe.
Yeah, a 2-star, 2.5. And it's like I said, a scathing 3-star review. And it seems like this movie really fucked with people because it's like, okay, it's beautiful. It's impeccably shot. It's got some pretty, I think, amazing performances and some nifty writing in it. But it's the sabo that this movie is contained in is just a pile of cliches. Mm-hmm. And like some of the stuff, like I was wondering when I was watching and I'm like, well, does some of this stuff seem hackneyed because this is kind of like one of the early things that set the model in terms of like sibling rivalries and ball busting? And cause man, you've just seen all these things before, but no, like everybody was making this. I was like, oh God damn, this sibling rivalry stuff, the former flame lover angle, a lot of the stuff is, the son that's motivated by losing a father. Like all this is just a collection of like these cliches that mm-hmm. Ron Moore has kind of stitched together and, you know, kind of gelled with his skill at filmmaking and also jaw dropping special effects. I guess.
Yeah.
This probably was a spectacle. Oh, my God. The sound design, you know, on my 5.1 system was rocking. Like when the backdrafts, like the snarls and the fire being an animal. Especially mm-hmm. when the fire truck crashed at the end of the movie. My God, I thought that thing was pulling through my living room. It must have been an experience to watch is what I'm getting at. Because like the power of the movie is kind of undeniable, even though it is a lot of kind of hack shit.
Yeah, I mean, it was nominated for 3 Oscars, one of which was two of which were sound, actually. Best sound, best sound editing, and also best visual effects. But it could not stand up to the
James Cameron, baby.
Yeah, the bonanza of effects.
Yeah, yeah.
That liquid metal effect really just took out all the
firemen
awards.
On fire for 2 hours cannot stand against one chrome skeleton in fire for 5 seconds. It just got blown off the stage, you know. Which fair enough.
But it was a huge success, this movie. Like they spent $40 million, which is a pretty big budget back then, in 1991, but it made $150 million. Which is, I think, wildly successful.
Back in the day? Just double that in terms of inflation.
I mean, you go a decade forward and you say the biggest... I mean, James Cameron did what? Almost like $1.2 billion with Titanic was like in the first year.
Or was that more Avatar? I don't know.
I thought in 97 he was doing like over a billion. But... $150 million for this movie, I think, is pretty amazing. Oh,
it's a Titanic standing at $659 million unadjusted.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's what the
Okay, yeah, it must have been Avatar that went billion. So that's even better, right? Like $150 mm-hmm. million for this, which wasn't the sensation. Because nobody really talked about this movie in terms of like, oh, you got to see it. This is the best movie ever.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think so. This movie was really popular in the day. I remember
because
I think it's also PG-13, which isn't it? It had to be, because I saw this movie back in the day, and I would not have been allowed to see Backdraft rating. It's rated R? How the fuck did I see this movie then?
I don't know, but it should be rated R. I mean, all the burnings.
Is it?
Because I thought that's imagery.
Yeah, I do remember, because I saw this. I did see it. I remember watching it. Not in the theater. I remember watching it in my parents' living room. Maybe because my uncle's a firefighter too. Maybe my mom made a family exception or something. But I remember being borderline traumatized by the firefighter Tim getting like the close up of his face burning inside his oxygen mask. I wonder if this scene goes as hard as I remember. Because, you know, I was like in 91, I was like, what, 12, 13 or something? I sheltered 12 or 13 year old that. Seeing a man's face melt was not in my performance envelope. And I'm like, God damn, no, they really went really fucking hard in that scene.
Yeah, nor should it be in your envelope. I think R is the right rating for this. I mean, the whole point of this movie is that these children were scarred by seeing their dad blow up in a fire. Yeah. I don't think you can then show 12-year-olds people blowing up in fires and say that's perfectly fine.
It'd be like a Bambi, except for you actually see the mother get shot. You know, like the bullets are riddling her body. And
yeah, not a kids movie anymore.
No.
You talked about Kurt Russell, you know, being two characters in this movie. And I was really surprised and confused by that for a second. What a wild coincidence that the son grows up to look exactly identical to his dad, but the other one looks nothing like him. The other one, I don't know how the genes worked there, but Billy Baldwin looks nothing like Kurt Russell. And then Kurt Russell looks
snuck into the Russell house
to Kurt Russell.
The Baldwins were delivering milk to the Russell house, and
must have been.
That's how you got William, or vice versa if you want to explain Bull.
It's just another weird element that makes this kind of funny.
It's another one of these, like, I feel like movies have switched to sympathies of late when you're talking about these problematic dudes, you know, because they show Kurt Russell as just a mess. He is like, it's kind of funny that he's still a lieutenant with this much experience. And we're like, that's like, because that when they called him lieutenant, I thought it was a mistake. I'm like, what the fuck? This guy can't, like, with the you know, the way his men love him and his career. But they make it a point that, like, politically, he's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Which, fair enough. It seems like the politicians in Chicago are trying to kill firefighters in the year 1990. But like he gets, there's a scene in the movie where he comes home and he's like crying on his ex-wife's shoulder, who's kind of played as like mildly horrified that he's there. And also, like, you know, the next morning, you know, he's like cooking breakfast to the kid and she takes him aside and like, you know, I don't want to confuse him. I feel like this movie is one of the age where they still kind of paint her, Rebecca De Mornay, as an asshole for like, come on, this guy's back. He wants to spend time with his kids. And, you know, like, don't you understand he's got a tough job and demands something and he's going to, you know, it's like they made the problem with her, like, fundamentally that he's doing a dangerous job rather than the fact that he is being a drunken asshole so much of it because of the fact that he's doing his job in a particularly crazy way.
His dad died doing the job and that's clearly affecting him, right? He's not in a good emotional place, but
right.
The movie puts all that baggage really onto Billy Baldwin.
Yeah. I just feel like if this movie was made today, Rebecca De Mornay would be a little bit more seen as a sympathetic figure rather than as like a person getting in the way of her father or her son's father.
Yeah. A lot more nuance in movies these days.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like, man, I remember that's the thing, watching this several times, because we watched this movie a lot. I don't know, like once we broke the seal in R, this is really bizarre. I wish I was on speaking terms with mom. She hadn't died a couple months ago, because I'd love to ask her why? Because there's two rated R movies I remember were allowed in our house, and it was this for sure and JFK. Why these movies, mom? Why these JFK? Movies? You know, JFK and Backdraft. You don't think it's just because she was hot for Kurt Russell? Because I've long suspected the reason that she did JFK is because she was hot for Kevin Costner.
Okay. Sure. I mean, if you got a soft spot for,
I don't want to think that my mom's religious views would be overridden by her baser instincts. But you know, I'm starting to think there's a lot of beef on the screen here. Or maybe she's hot for Donald Sutherland and explains them both.
There you go. Is that closer to her age bracket too? Maybe.
I think they're definitely within her dating range. Sure.
Yeah. I don't know, because you're right. If it was Kurt Russell that was the attraction, you would think there would also be exceptions for Roadhouse. There'd be exceptions for A Big Trouble, Little China. Mm. There'd be exceptions for a lot of other movies, right?
There was a mild case of being blown to safety that was actually subverted and then reverted. Did you see that? Where they're trying to get off the alderman's porch, and De Niro drags Billy Baldwin out, and he drags the alderman out, and then explosion happens, and he gets thrown off the porch. I'm like, oh, wow, this is the most mild case of blown to safety I've ever seen, because he got blown maybe 6 feet, and it wasn't all that dangerous of an explosion anyway. But then he got impaled on the guy's wrought iron fence, and I'm like, oh, fuck, he's dead. Blown to safety subverted, but no, he just got lightly impaled, and he's just got a shoulder sling on the next scene, and he's raging that I'm stuck in this hospital, and you're gonna have to be the one that talks to the flaming psycho. I thought that was a real meme roller coaster for me.
It was, yeah, because I was worried about all the same things, like oh god, Robert De Niro is dead, but he kind of is at that point. He's sidelined in the movie, completely, and then he only shows up at the funeral again,
and he roasts the alderman at a press conference. No,
oh less. Right, he does do that. He throws the report, the papers on the table.
For such a hacky, so like, there's the other thing that makes me a little bit mildly offended that you are comparing this to like the Armageddons and the Day After Tomorrow, because there's a moment where Kurt Russell squares off a Scott Glenn with axes in the middle of an inferno. And I'm like, it's been a while since I've seen this movie, but like, I do not remember a raging axe battle. If this was Michael Bay shooting this, they would have fucking just gone at it. But instead, they're like, Scott Glenn's got this moment of like, what the fuck am I doing? Am I going to slaughter my brother fireman here in this temple of fire to cover up my crimes that I did to keep from killing firemen? Like, I don't know. And then the price was paid for the sin immediately. Like, Scott Glenn for burning all these arguably corrupt people and like giving his brother fireman a third degree burn on his face that he's probably not going to recover from. He's going to get burned alive. And then I guess, like, why does Kurt Russell die? For a sin of being asshole Kurt Russell? For a sin of trying to cover it up?
I guess.
Because there was a few morally awkward questions that were raised.
It's because he couldn't live, right? It's not because he deserved to die. It's because he couldn't live. He didn't know how to live. He was going to die one way or another. He's running into burning buildings, waving his axe at fire, saying, come at me, you beast. He's destined to die.
Yeah. And he died on his own. He didn't let the fire get him. Like, he dies of internal injuries related to the fire, but the fire itself did not.
He was
get
in
him.
A burning building when he got his internal injuries, but fire, his body like is pristine.
It's like Walt Disney World says no one's ever died in Walt Disney World, because you actually die in a hospital ride as soon as you get across the gate. You know, like, I don't know if that's true. That's an urban legend, but like, yeah, the fire didn't kill me. It was the drop in the fire onto a 6-inch steel pipe through my midsection. That's what killed me. Entirely unfire related.
I mean, I liken this movie to movies like Armageddon and others because of how silly they are at times. Like, I think the fire effects are cool, but way overdone. I think I couldn't help but laugh out loud, like I said, when the backdrafts happen and blow people across the street. And the backdrafts are happening constantly. It's not like, the backdraft happens when they plant the one specific trigger.
Like, backdrafts happen
and open
when
the door.
Screw up they're trapped.
Right.
Into it, yeah.
But backdrafts in this movie happen at random in any location, like just a window that's not on fire and there's not really much fire around it anywhere blows out suddenly. And there's a backdraft happening from the outside in, which I'm pretty sure is not how backdrafts work. And then things like the socket, the outlet shaped burns on Scott Glenn's shoulder to give away that he's the arsonist.
I want to talk about that. Yeah,
it's literally like two outlets and the shape of the face plate of the socket on his shoulder. It's laughable.
Yeah, that's we joked. I think this was on The Walking Dead last week. We joked about, you know, the three-step Martin reveal, which I got to remember that. I got to keep explaining this, you know, that like George Martin gave this interview like 10 years ago where he says the way he likes to do his like deep dive reveals is he like likes to bury a nugget that he thinks only like one in a million readers would pick up on. And then he likes doing something that he thinks like a reasonably intelligent person, an astute person will observe. And the aforementioned one in a million person will be like, aha, I'm onto something. Mm-hmm. And then just so and no one's left behind, then you just kind of like have to reveal it. That's the third step where it's like, you know, the thing that you've hinted at actually happens and everybody can go on and enjoy the story. I've rarely seen a three-step Martin reveal in a single scene, but this movie... like takes the cake because like there's this more where like you see like a slight
too fast
slight burn that you can kind of sort of see, and Billy Baldwin's like, huh, and then Billy Baldwin looks at it more and the camera zooms in and it's like, oh, it's an obvious burn on his shoulder in the exact right place where he got the unknown assailant in the blown the safety fire got burnt. And then Billy Baldwin looks at it more intently and that final zoom in, oh my god, guys, your makeup guys, you can't like when someone says, hey, this guy got burned by it, you can't just like literally tattoo an outlet on his shoulder and call it good. No.
It was ridiculous. The other thing that I think is so cheesy and shitty about this movie is the smack talk. So it's fun when the firefighters are doing it, right? Like they're bringing in this mannequin. They're talking about like how great he was at saving this stupid mannequin. All of that stuff in the firehouse is great. You get to the alderman coming onto the scene and he is talking. So he's having a conversation with Kurt Russell and he says this line that's supposed to be smack talk where he's like, you know, that light in the corner of your eye that's blinking. It's the career dissipation light and it's blinking nonstop now. And this line is god awful the first time it's said, but then it's used as a hammer, as a callback in the final moments of this movie by Billy Baldwin. And it just doesn't work. It's way too clunky of a line. It's too long. It like takes way too much deciphering to understand what the fuck he's talking about.
The thing is, it's like,
it's a terrible line.
So what is the conceit of this insult? Because I agree with you.
The conceit is you're flushing your career down the toilet right now.
But like your life is a dashboard on a car and there's this blinking light on the corner of it. And it's like, it's your career dissipation light.
Uh-huh.
The analogy is it would be like an engine trouble or a check engine or an engine. There's no like engine dissipation light. The word dissipation. How the fuck did that get out of the second first round of editing? Like, look,
is this something with fire trucks? Like, is there a light that goes on a fire truck when the hose is running low?
They actually have a career dissipation light that goes off when someone causes a backdraft. It's I can't believe you didn't. This is like an inner ring.
Shit,
only firefighters and their immediate blood relatives are supposed to know this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's like it should have been like your career trouble light is flashing, or your check career light is flashing, or your career failure. But career dissipation?
It's terrible. Terrible line.
Is that something you got to defend to get a PhD? You know, like your doctorate dissipation. It's like that's something you gotta right before you can actually call yourself doctor. I gotta say that
smacks of like desperation writing. Like, fuck, it's the last night before the final draft is due, and I have to come up with a line here that ties us all together. What am I gonna do? Fuck it, I don't know. Career dissipation light.
Well, that's one of the reasons I thought this movie was not R-rated, because the language, or maybe I'm just like inured to my own damn self, but like I thought that a lot of the insults were very up to season 8 of The Walking Dead, where it's like I've hung around a lot of firemen. You know, my uncle's buddies would always come over my granddad's pool and just through my brother and all that stuff. They swear a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They swear a lot. They're like grown up junior high schoolers in their pranks and their vulgar behavior. I found like most of that stuff was like toned down to just like making fun of people's ears and haircuts and the fact that they're so stupid they'd carry a mannequin out of a fire and think they'd save someone. Yeah, a lot of bad banter. A lot of bad banter. A lot of 1950s Opie banter, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. Yeah, it is Ron Howard. I mean, he didn't write the movie, so you can't really blame it on him. But like, you're right. You're right. It's a little too sanitized for a movie that's already rated R. Just fucking go for it.
Yeah.
But they want to make firefighters heroes. Like, the point of this movie is to...
But you don't have to showcase the heroism of firefighters. They just kind of are, you know? Like, if you show a couple of...
Yeah, but they don't want to drag them through the mud and say, well, these guys curse all the time. And although they show them hilariously just like smoking like chimneys.
Well, yeah.
which I thought was deliciously
ironic. They're smoke eaters, man. Also, all of the badass euphemisms they have for themselves, like fire eaters, smoke eaters, all that stuff, pretty cool. We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. And now, back with more Bald Move. God, I had a point to your point about... What was your overall point about...
They didn't want to drag them through the mud with cursing.
They didn't want to drag them, but like, that's something you do in a PG-13 movie where kids... But like, if we're all adults here, like, let the firefighters swear. Like, I've seen plenty of war films. They swear, like, sailors, or literal sailors in some cases, and they're seen as heroic. So come on, they're rough and tumble men. Yeah. You know, you don't want people in pinstripe suits showing up when your structure's on. You want dudes wearing like fucking fancy multiple shoes. Layers of fire retardant shit and ridiculous 1800s helmets.
You want them wearing
with axes like that would put a dwarf from Tolkien to shame. And you want them to swing into action.
What you definitely want them doing, though, is wearing their... It's not scuba gear because it's not underwater. It's SCBA, right?
Scuba?
That's what I'm going to call it for shorthand, scuba. You definitely want them wearing that, but they are not in this movie. And, you know, it's a movie, but you want us to respect them as the professionals that they are. You can't have a lunatic without a helmet, without any breathing apparatus, run into a fire yelling about animals and waving an axe, and then me come away thinking, oh yeah, firefighters are very good at their job.
Well, especially since like Kurt Russell's all this like fussy about buttoning up his brother's bonnet and making sure his clasp would just so. Yeah. And then he walks in there with a helmet, no chin strap, coat open, you know, flapping around. But I guess, you know, that's why he's Bull.
Really do a disservice to firefighters in that regard, I think.
I get that Billy Baldwin is a probie in this film, which is rookie for firefighter, probationary firefighter. Mm. But he is portrayed as the dumbest fucking person on the planet. Like, I'm not sure how much adrenaline you need in your body. Because have you ever picked up a mannequin?
No. I'm trying to think when I would have had the opportunity to pick up a mannequin.
You ever worked at department stores and stuff and had to move shit around or anything?
No, I worked at Target and a Walmart, but always in
you
electronics.
You worked at a Target and you never handled a mannequin.
Why would I? I'm in electronics. Why would I?
Oh, so you never...
If I were in clothing, sure.
Didn't look sufficiently busy enough to have to like move shit around? Okay, whatever. You haven't touched a mannequin. That's not weird. It's not weird to not touch a mannequin, apparently.
It's not. It's really
not.
But
I'm going to tell you, mannequins don't weigh hardly anything. They're just like hollow things to hold clothes on. Like, I can't imagine a guy picking up a mannequin, carrying it downstairs and thinking, oh, yes, this is a human woman that I have saved.
I have picked up a person before, and they feel heavy. They feel pretty heavy.
Yes, people are very heavy. Yeah. They're heavy. They're floppy.
I have to imagine hollow body plastic thing would not feel nearly as heavy as a human being.
Yeah, yeah. It was a funny scene, though, especially when the guy's like, it's too late for this one. And they show her face.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought that was great. And then when Scott Glenn brings it back in the firehouse.
Yeah,
so
funny.
To roast him.
I mean, they kept on doing stuff with it. Like, I thought they were going to do something with the jealousy angle, because the guy who actually did, the rookie who did rescue the woman, they got, you know, because I guess the story's too good that the hero fireman who's the son of this slain hero firefighter who was on the Time Life cover is now on his first day fighting fires, has rescued a woman. They're like, Tim doesn't have that story, so fuck him. Put in Billy there. But how are you going to rescue a mannequin and make me take you seriously? There's also, this is like so funny in terms of firefighters, but there's this like poster it's hanging up in, you know, Station 17's break room, and it says, you know, Chicago or Station 17 Chicago firefighting, 150 years of tradition unimpeded by progress. And I laugh because there are so many, like, I've often been fast, because if you look at around the rest of the world, no one uses the classic firefighting helmet except for Americans. They all have gone to like things that look like motorcycle helmets that have, you know, enhanced safety features and hearing protection installed and like integrated, you know, so you can just clip on your SCBA. You don't have to strap it to your face and all that kind of stuff. And I've often wondered, you know, why is that? And I've searched, I've read Reddit threads and stuff. And like, just before this movie, I double checked it, but there's like, you know, they asked these on firefighters and like they list the pros and cons, and almost all the pros are on the Euro style helmets and all the cons are on the American style helmets, but it all comes down to like, but they look so fucking badass. Like even the Euro guys are like there's guys in Germany. It's like, I would trade all of our Euro safe helmets in the world to wear one of those fucking cool ass American firefighting helmets, or like the old British firefighting helmets with like the spikes on them or something. It's like they do revere tradition to maybe an excessive degree. But it's also funny because like if you made this movie in 2020 or 2021 or 2022, today's current year, you'd have guys using like FLIR to like look for survivors and identify hotspots. Like, yeah, sure. They do. There's a lot of technology that is introduced slowly but surely, anything that saves lives and stuff like that. But I just thought that was such a funny 150 years of tradition unimpeded by progress. It's such a hilarious self-knowing statement from these guys.
Especially in Chicago, right?
Giant-ass
fire.
The second city.
I couldn't help but think of like Gangs of New York when I'm watching this movie too, because I remember in that movie they have those scenes of firefighters, like prototype firefighter squads showing up with their horse-drawn trucks and putting out fires, but at a price. Essentially, being mercenaries who come in and blackmail you to put out the fire in your house.
Yeah, the libertarian ideal of firefighting, which is you have three competing fire departments showing up, haggling over price, getting in fist fights over who's got the
and
right
then maybe
to this
putting
bell.
Your fire out if the price is right and they can get to it after the fights. Sure. There are enough people left unfought to put out the fire.
Yeah.
It's just wild how that's evolved and turned into like this super respectable thing now. And I was thinking about like those base services, you know, things that there was an opportunity there, right? That people saw, well, fires happen and somebody needs to be there to put these out.
It can happen to anyone. If you don't take care of it, it can get out of control and hurt a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there was an opportunity there and people like latched onto it. But then it turned into something that we recognize as a society. Yeah, this is actually a useful service. We need it. And we turn it into something more efficient, more above board and more helpful. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how that can work sometimes.
Beginning.
Yeah, like every time I see it's like people treat it, I think, as like ridiculous that something should be free. Like just on the face of it, like that's the default expectation. When it's like, you know, think of things in terms of like police and like hospital, like emergency services and fire departments and even libraries, like how, if we invented them today, there's no way they'd be free. Mm-hmm. They'd have like, you know, like, well, we can show up and spray some water on the building for this. We can show up and spray some water, foam retarded foam for this. But if you want the gold, I recommend the Gold Star service. We actually will bust down a door and try to rescue some people. Yeah. But, you know, that's kind of, you know, if you really care about your building and the people that live, you probably spring for the gold service plan. You know,
and now it'd be like subscription.
You're 3 months behind. Your building's on fire. You know, you're just Gangs of New York, essentially.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, it turns out we need this stuff. The people who do it are impressive. There was one other thing that I thought was hilarious. It's when Billy Baldwin has like taken this job from the alderman, and I think they're having a party on his boat as they're cruising down the Chicago River there. And alderman just wants to do like, just wants to, it's a photo op for him with Billy Baldwin. He doesn't care about him. So he goes up to him and he's like, let's get a picture with Mr. McCaffrey and myself. And as soon as he says that, and I couldn't help but think, well, this is the Windy City. As soon as he says, let's get a picture, Billy Baldwin's hair gets caught in the wind and stands up like Beetlejuice. It's wild. Every other moment of the movie, it is slicked back. It is either wet or covered in mousse or grease or something. And in this moment, it just stands straight up. And they take the photo, and the very next scene, it's slicked back perfectly. I thought it was a beautiful shot.
Well, that's just some world-class hair memory. You know, that hair has been trained within an inch of its life. It's like, yeah, the Windy City can you know, buffalo it for a second, but as soon as it slackens just a little bit, a lizard frill. Just goes right back down.
I'm envious. I like it.
Now, are you sure it is the wind, or was he about ready to spit poison in that guy's face?
Maybe. Dennis Nedry was standing
across
the way. He's
about to do a Dennis Nedry on that guy. Yeah. all right, we got your Jurassic Park joke in. I guess it's my Jurassic Park joke. What else we got?
Is there really a guy coming by to look at Kurt Russell's boat to buy it at midnight, 2 a.m. whenever Billy Baldwin's there? Because at the end, like, he thinks his brother has set the fires and he goes to his boat and he looks at the trick to collate or whatever.
Yeah.
And then Kurt Russell comes up and he says, there's a guy coming by in a couple minutes to look at the boat. I'm selling it. But it's pitch black. It's middle of the night. Someone's looking at your boat. Like, this is the shadiest Craigslist deal I've ever seen. Down at the dock. Meet me down at the docks at midnight.
I didn't even think. I didn't think anything of that. But I guess if I was to think about it, you're supposed to understand that Kurt Russell's just trying to tell his brother, get the fuck out of here. Like, with an obvious lie.
Maybe.
Like, if you come in, it's like, hey, I got to walk my dog, beat it, you know? Like, what dog?
It's the only thing I could think. Right.
Huh. Oh, did you know that trichochlorate or whatever? Did you know that's a fictitious chemical?
I assumed that none of this stuff, like when they talk about, oh, you combine plumber's putty and some other thing, could be real, because they don't want to tell people how to start fires.
I thought that was kind of dumb, but then I immediately thought, like, yeah, if someone's, you know, if I'm Ron Howard especially, and someone burns down a place and it's like, oh, they used a chemical, it's the Backdraft copycat. You don't want that.
No.
It felt a little cheesy, like when I looked it up, and I'm like, huh, why? Because it wasn't clear to me why a firefighter would need to use the chemical, and why, like, what legitimate reason it would be used in reconstructing a boat. Because that's what it felt like. It's like, oh, yeah. It's like, hey, you're stealing this from the fire. No, I'm just, you know, I got some extra, and I'm like using it to fix up the boat somehow. But it's a fake chemical, so like, who the fuck knows? Who the fuck cares?
Yeah. I don't know. Some of my feelings on this movie. I had a great time watching it. I think it's hilarious. I like firefighters. Those are my thoughts.
All right. that is quite the thing you're staking out here, Jim. Quite the position you're staking out. That'll do it for this week's discussion of a prestige movie, Backdraft. Guess what? Next week, we're seeing Glass Onion.
Right.
Which is the sequel, or I guess another in the Knives Out anthology or series, or what's now going to be a series with Daniel Craig as this Southern Fried investigator. I'm going to rewatch Knives Out because I recall thinking I liked it, but I didn't like it nearly as much as like you and Cecily and Alexis did. So I feel like I'm missing something. I don't remember it that well. So I want to watch it. And then we're going to see that next week and have a first run prestige movie. So you got that to look forward to. Now that will be only the spoiler-free version, like what we did in the beginning of this movie. Will be our spoiler-free thoughts and opinions will be free, and then you go watch the movie, and then you listen to our spoiler. But if you want to do that, you got to be a club member, support.baldmove.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week on Glass Onion. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.